This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock.
This is primetime on Football Friday. 1080 The Fan.
We're going to ring that championship bell.
60 minutes. Let's open up the whole can of kick ass and kill them all. Let the paramedics sort them out. Ready?
This is a Football Friday edition of Primetime with Isaac and Souk.
Brought to you by the Radio.com app. Download the app, make the fan your favorite station, and enable push notifications for the latest on the Ducks, Beavers, Blazers, and your favorite shows.
On 1080, The Fan.
All right, welcome back. We'll set your college football DVR in our next segment. And Joe Harrington by phone today as he travels the world, probably building homes for the underprivileged.
I think he's skiing.
Oh.
Yeah, I think he's on vacation.
Oh, okay.
He's a rich white guy. I think that's what...
So that means he's at a resort?
I would think so. Doesn't he seem like the type?
He's always at the Butte. I bet he's at Black Butte.
Yeah. He just seems like the type that would be up on a mountain somewhere wearing like a, you know, like a very expensive
like
sweater.
Todd and Margo.
Yes. You know, little kids like perfectly, like their hair's coiffed and they have matching ski outfits wearing Uggs. It just kind of seems that way.
I can picture it.
Yeah.
So Joey will be at 5:30. Better You Today text line 55305. Yeah, this guy says, my family got real upset with me that I wasn't excited for a friend that shared the news with us that he was expecting his first kid. Apparently, why would you want to do that? Seemed like an inappropriate response to them. It is funny. You know, it's a little bit like the, like being a non-believer. Like, people get really... If you say you don't like kids, and I joke about not liking kids, but like I just don't like like really little kids. I think they're obnoxious.
Sure.
My favorite time with Meatball was probably the age of seven to ten. I thought was a great age because they can be self-sufficient and they're kind of figuring out the world and everything's cool and new and it's just fun. But younger than that, when you gotta just like make a macaroni and wipe their ass, it's like it's just. Like, why would you want to do that?
Rops out.
Shun the non-believer. Shun.
So it's kind of like that where it's becoming more and more common for non-believers to be able to say it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, whatever. Okay, to each their own. But it used to be very taboo. Like, you couldn't say that. And it's kind of like that with kids where if you say that you don't know why anyone would want to have kids, like, people get really defensive about it. Like, what the hell? Well, but now it's becoming more and more acceptable.
It is. You know, less and less people are having kids. I mean, that is a...
Because they're admitting what they were...
Yes, that they,
society
want, that
was
they
initially,
want freedom and money.
Well, they're admitting that what society was initially denying, and that is that we say we like them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anytime...
Not all of us.
Anytime you're in staunch... like, you're staunchly opposite of a popular held belief, it can be a bit dicey.
It can. Yeah. No question. You're right.
Yeah.
Especially one that's like... That society just tells you.
Yeah.
It's like, well, parents, you've said this before. Look, your kids drive you effing crazy.
Uh-huh.
And it used to be that you couldn't even admit that they're driving you crazy.
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't say that because it would make you feel guilty.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, it doesn't mean you hate your kids. You don't love your kids. They kind of suck sometimes. Just admit it.
I had this like a year or two ago. My daughter, we were all sitting around and I don't remember what I was doing. Oh, I was signing. This was like, I want to say a year or two ago. I was signing papers for school, and my daughter points out to me, she looks at me and goes, you have never once looked at what you're signing, nor do you ask what you're signing. And I went, oh crap. My kids just hand me stuff and I sign it. And my oldest daughter goes, you know, they're going to start figuring this out. But the older I got, the more I realized how different you were than other people's parents. And I was like, I don't think that's a good thing, is it? My daughter went, it can be good and bad. But there is that element that, yes, there is a there's a widely held belief that there was only one way to do it and you had to do it this way. And I think there's more and more people that are kind of...
And you could never admit
you could never admit it.
I love them. Of course you love them.
Yeah.
But he's being an ass.
My son is an idiot.
Yeah. Do you want to go volunteer at the school?
No.
I don't want to be involved in
that.
Why
would anyone want to do that?
Yeah. I was ahead of that curve. Hey, do you want to chaperone this? God, no. I can't think of anything worse.
Yeah, I'm not your guy.
No.
I'm not your guy, guy.
Nope.
I'm not your guy, buddy. By the way, Drew says, my kids are great. Your kids are not. And a lot of people believe that. People are like that.
I'm a little bit that way.
It's like with dogs.
I love my kids, but I'm not.
Are kids dogs?
I'm not clamoring to be around a bunch of other people's kids.
Yeah, somebody said, try saying you don't like dogs and see what happens. But that's true because I'm a big dog guy.
Yeah.
But I would never, if somebody doesn't like dogs, I don't. All right, that's
my wife does not like dogs.
Really? Yeah.
I hate your wife. She's a Nazi.
She had a really bad experience where a dog attacked her when she was younger. She's like, I am not a dog person.
I had that, but I overcame it.
Yeah. Well, I'm dug into a little bit of this right now.
I'm a miracle.
With the whole Halloween thing, you know, the whole ghost.
Miracle baby.
Ghost stories. There is a faction of my family that very much believes in ghosts and the spooky.
It's like Mike's fam.
Yeah. I, for about the last month, have been taunting the evil spirits and welcoming them into the house, and I'm getting a lot of blowback on it, like a lot of blowback where people are starting to get angry at me and think that I'm endangering everyone's lives.
Yeah. And you have a tendency to do that to people, though. You go too far.
Yeah, and I think it's fantastic.
Well, that's your problem.
The other morning, the lights flickered and the doorbell started ringing, and it was wonderful. I went off for about 3 hours about how the house was finally haunted, and no one was enjoying it, but I thought it was the best morning I've had in months.
All right, we'll set your DVR next. Right now, the Hot 5 at 5.
Oh. Hot topics, hot opinions.
Oh, golly, I'm hot today.
And hot air. It's time for the Hot 5 at 5.
That's hot.
The Hot 5 at 5 on Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
No, I mean it. That's very hot.
The Hot 5 at 5. Refreshed on the fan by Frost Brewed Coors Light.
Number five.
Oregon meets Memphis next week in the PK Invitational in basketball. The top recruit in the nation, the number one guy, his name is James Wiseman, went to Memphis. He may or may not be available for that game. He is currently playing tonight because a judge issued a stay, but he earlier today was deemed ineligible. And Memphis coach Penny Hardaway was deemed a booster because Penny funded Wiseman and his family's move to Memphis before his freshman year in college there.
And then Penny became the head coach and Wiseman signed with Memphis, and you can't be doing that. But right now, Wiseman's on the floor and Penny Hardaway is coaching. So we'll see what happens. And by the way, they said it was $11,000. Well, $11,500. So I wonder if this could be one of those, like, they pay it back and they move on, or if he's deemed ineligible for the rest of the year. But apparently, Wiseman's attorney is suing both the University of Memphis and the NCAA.
He's suing the school?
He's suing the school.
Why?
Number four.
I don't know. It just says that his attorney is Leslie, I think her name is Ballin, by the way.
Yeah.
His attorney is Leslie Ballin. All right, get
that
it done.
That could be a male.
Oh, that is true. But no, because it says she.
Okay.
Says she's they're planning on suing the University of Memphis and the NCAA, but it doesn't say for what.
Weird. Florida State apparently wants to be placed on probation because the latest candidate for their head coaching vacancy is Deion Sanders.
Makes sense considering that he's never coached anywhere, but you know, whatever.
Well, no, he has. He's been a high school coach.
He's been a high school coordinator at his own academy. yes, on the up and up. Now,
well,
to be fair,
Herm Edwards didn't coach in college football for 25 years, and look what he's doing.
Have we not learned anything? Football's football.
He was a head coach two times over in the NFL, though. I guess the Tallahassee Democrat tried to shoot this down. Supposedly, this got started because the boosters are involved in the process here.
Shocking.
And my guess is that one booster told another one, hey, you know it'd be great? Deion Sanders. Think of the recruiting.
Prime did toy with the idea of joining Willie Taggart's staff as a DB's coach. The Noles say they want a coach in place by the end of the month in order to capitalize on the early signing period of December. Jack Sears considering a transfer to Oregon State. You may be asking yourself, who is Jack Sears? Well, he's a former USC quarterback who transferred out of USC after losing out to JT Daniels and then Keaton Slovis. He started just one game as a Trojan, but he was the nation's number four pro-style quarterback in the class of 2017. That was behind the likes of Jake Fromm, Davis Mills, and Hunter Johnson.
Yeah, he's going to be in Corvallis tonight for the UW game. They're actually saying this is a pretty big recruiting weekend. They got that big junior, or the big transfer from Auburn's going to be there, a couple JUCO kids. So they're saying this is hopefully going to be a big night for the Beavs with a good showing against UW on a Friday night.
UCLA grad transfer receiver Theo Howard is there. Also, Arizona State kicker Brandon Ruiz checking out Oregon State as well. The Beavers taking on Washington, 7:30 kick. Huskies favored by 10.
This would be a big get if they could get Sears. I mean, talking about a number four pro-style quarterback, USC recruit, you're going to need one after Luton goes.
So Sears and Jebbia were both top 10 quarterbacks in the same class. They would have to compete for the starting job next year.
Nice problem to have. This would be a huge get for Oregon State. And by the way, I cannot get over how short.
It's unbelievable. That kid right there.
Wow. I mean, it is.
I mean, he's got nice legs, but geez.
He is wearing the world's shortest
basketball. I feel like they're tucked in.
He has tucked them into spandex.
He just pulled them down slightly.
Yeah, he tucks them into his spandex underneath his uniform.
It looks like he's wearing hot pants, like he's going to go do a shift at the Thunder from down under. Number 11 for Memphis.
All right. Ohio State.
You think it's to distract the other team?
Well, it's distracting us.
Like you're staring.
Oh, now he's hurt.
You're staring at his silky thighs, and then you can't guard him.
Ohio State defensive end Chase Young is the best player in college football, but now he may be suspended indefinitely. The NCAA is looking into a loan he says he took from a friend of a family member before his freshman year. He says he repaid it last summer. He has been suspended for the Maryland game this weekend. And the school and the NCAA are reviewing it.
Now, on the plus side, they play Maryland this week and Rutgers next. So my guess is let's do a two-game suspension here. Say he paid back the loan, wink, wink, nod, nod, and then he's back in time for Penn State. Everybody wins.
Blazers still looking for their first home win as they host Kyrie Irving and the Nets tonight. So it's a back-to-backer. Brooklyn just 3-4, but they're pretty well rested. They haven't played since Monday. They beat New Orleans. DeAndre Jordan is already hurt. He rolled his ankle Monday. He is questionable for tonight. The Blazers lost last night to the Clippers. They were outscored by 12 in the fourth quarter. The Blazers are now 3-5. And a shocking development here, Warriors guard Steph Curry may not play again this season. The team is now saying his injured wrist is more serious than previously thought.
I thought it was his hand? Or are they saying it's his wrist now?
I don't know. Aren't they close together?
Yeah, but either way,
something in there.
Someone had a report saying that he wasn't going to play this year, and then Golden State had to come out and try to pretend like, oh no, that's not true at all. We're not tanking. There's no reason for him to come back and play.
The Hot 5 at 5, refreshed by Coors Light. Enter to win an Oregon branded Yeti cooler anywhere Coors Light is sold. Coors Light, mountain cold refreshment made to chill. All right, how is your college football viewing Saturday shaping up? We'll tell you next on The Fam.
This is a Football Friday edition of Primetime with Isaac and Souk.
Brought to you by the Radio.com app.
On 1080 The Fan.
All right, coming up next, Joey Harrington. Talk a little bit about the Ducks, their spot in the college football playoff race, how big these buys are. You know, football.
Things of that nature.
Cue the music there, Maestro. Let's set your college football DVR. Here's what your day is looking like. 9 a.m., you actually get some good stuff. You do, because
well, it's the nooner.
Yeah, it's the nooner, and there are two undefeated teams. The two teams that nobody is talking about because they haven't really played anyone yet that are undefeated are both playing at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Baylor at TCU on FS1, and then Minnesota hosting Penn State, also undefeated, on ABC.
And Minnesota, by the way, they haven't played anyone. Minnesota's been bludgeoning people. Baylor, on the other hand, Baylor's sitting there at number 12, and Baylor keeps winning by the skin of their teeth.
They're headed towards Turdville.
Eventually, Baylor's going to get tripped up here because they have played, I want to say they've played three or four games that have come down to just the one score at the end. And they're at TCU and then Oklahoma, Texas. Then, of course, they finish out the year.
Kansas.
At Kansas. I mean, that's a loss right there. And then Penn State. Yeah, you're right. Penn State, Minnesota. I think I'm more interested in Penn State, Minnesota. Yeah.
Oh, I want to see what Minnesota's got going on.
Me too. But I don't think Minnesota or Baylor is going to be there at the end. Penn State is intriguing. I'd like to see Penn State win this because I want to see Penn State, Ohio State in 2 weeks undefeated.
You do get wait, who's coaching Florida State now?
I don't know who their interim is.
Isn't Leavitt, is it?
No, Leavitt's...
He's down there.
I think
it is Leavitt, actually. Is it?
Let me look
I remember
that up.
Seeing a tweet that said something about Leavitt getting some sort of duties.
Right. See, we're all over it.
Clearly paying a lot
Leavitt
of attention.
Leavitt has some sort of duties. But they're playing Boston College on the ACC Network. And then you have Maryland, Ohio State on Fox at 9. So...
No.
Purdue Northwestern.
Odell Haggins.
Oh, okay.
Veteran FSU assistant Odell Haggins.
Never heard
of
him.
Is a natural fit to lead the Seminoles through adversity.
Kind of
looks
know.
Like Lovie Smith a little bit.
Adversity?
Yeah. They're in the midst of it a little
Calm
bit.
Calm down.
I don't know if you've watched them play, but they suck.
I haven't. Actually, I did. I saw them at the Boise State game.
They need kids Bob Karen to come calm them down.
Yeah, calm down.
Calm down.
I'm telling you, man.
They find her yet?
I cannot focus on what's going on because I keep looking up and seeing the Memphis kids' booty shorts.
You're attracted to him, aren't
it
you?
It is throwing me for a loop.
They can't hear me because they're listening to Kids Bop.
Sook does like calves.
They are it's not the calves. They are uncomfortably short. And he's tucking them in. They're not naturally that short. He has now tucked his shorts.
Never seen that in my life.
Into his spandex.
I've never seen it in my life.
And that can't be comfortable. He's got to be trolling people with
very
that.
Very weird. Yeah, very, very strange.
He was heading
but
to
the kids, you know, the
he
kids.
He was heading to the bench at least.
Kids these days. Okay, so those are your Niners. So not bad. Not bad.
No, it's a decent slate.
With your morning coffee.
Noon, if you want. You got Stanford at Colorado if you want a little Pac-12 action.
I don't, thank you.
No, you don't. And then at 12:30 is the big one, Game of the Century Part 2, and hopefully it's better than the first
Why
one.
Why is that not at 5? The LSU-Alabama game? And can we not call it the game of the century, please?
I know. Well, it's lost some of its luster because it's not 1 versus 2 anymore. It's 2 versus 3.
Yeah.
So whatever.
Well, it's an awesome game. Like, I can't wait to watch it. I mean, I remember when LSU and Alabama played when they were 1 and 2, and I could wait to watch it because you knew it was just going to be one of those old SEC no offensive.
There should be points.
And the final score
of
that game was 9-6. This is going to be fun.
Neither defense is that good, and both teams can score. Although I think it was Gary Danielson. Someone today was referenced that they were able. I think it's him. Because I think he's calling the game. They were down watching the Alabama practice, and he said that Tua did not look very good. He said he did not look like the old Tua. Said he was there was no spring to his step, so he is not anywhere near 100%.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, so that's 12:30. I'm not sure why it's not at 5. That's usually when that big CBS game is. But whatever. 12:30, that's cool. Kansas State, Texas, do anything for you? ESPN 12:30?
Nope, Texas is the UW of the Big 12.
That's a good one.
It was a good brand name, and we expected a lot, and they've been in a lot of close games, and we don't care. They're not in the top 25.
Kansas State, I don't know, man. I mean, they're having a nice year. That coach that they hired was a good coach, Chris Klieman.
Yeah, he's the guy from North Dakota State.
They're not. I don't know.
They beat Oklahoma.
They beat Kansas.
Who'd they lose to?
I think Baylor got them. I want to say Baylor got
them. Oklahoma's,
them.
Yeah, they lost 2 in a row. The Baylor got them, and Oklahoma State got them.
Yeah. USC Arizona State is a 12:30 game on ABC, if you can stomach that. I don't know if you can, but.
Well,
I don't know, maybe Arizona State just to see what Oregon has coming up.
Sure. And Arizona State, by the way, hasn't played very well last couple of weeks. They've taken 2 bad losses in a row to Utah and UCLA.
Maybe football's no longer football.
So I kind of want to see if they can rebound here a little bit against USC, because USC is in a bit of a free-for-all, but that's still a talented team.
Okay. Iowa, Wisconsin, 1 o'clock on Fox.
Nope.
Boy, Washington State, Cal, 4 o'clock, Pac-12 Network. That's an interesting one. I don't know. Cal's always had a pretty good, well, always. Under Wilcox, it seems like Cal's defense has done a good job against Mike Leach's offense.
Yeah.
But they just I saw that Wilcox was saying that he wasn't going to release who his starting quarterback is, Monster or that other guy.
The 12-year-old?
Yeah.
They don't.
As if that mattered.
Their offense is so bad right now, and I feel bad for them because...
But can they run on Cal? I mean, or Washington State kind of keep that game close?
maybe. But they, you know, they've lost four in a row, and it hasn't really been competitive.
Well, yeah, it has. The only one that wasn't was Utah. Washington's, or the Oregon State game was close. The
Utah wasn't. Oregon really wasn't.
What was the final of the Oregon game?
17-7.
A 10-point game.
Yeah, but did Cal at any point scare you?
They were winning
you?
At half, weren't they?
Was it? They only scored seven.
And what was the other one?
Arizona State.
What was the score of that one?
They won double digits. Cal's lost four in a row. They can't win with their offense right now. They just can't.
I feel like I won that argument.
Did you?
Yeah.
Have
I
you
feel
seen,
good about it.
Have you seen Cal play?
I have. It's not pretty.
No.
It's bad. So they get Washington State. And then you've got... yeah, the late ones are all crappy, man. Notre Dame, Duke, 4:30. Iowa State, Oklahoma at 5.
BYU, Liberty.
Huh? What? Is that Liberty? That's our boy.
Yeah, that's...
What's his nuts? Is he still coaching from a...
Hugh Freeze?
From a rascal?
I'm assuming he's out of the stupid rascal hospital bed. I would assume.
Yeah, there's nothing late. So basically, folks, for your day tomorrow...
You're done at
you're
like,
done
what,
after
three,
the
right?
12:30 games.
Yeah. You're finished.
Everything's early. I kind of like that.
And then, you know, Oregon State, we didn't meet. Oregon State's tonight.
Yeah.
Oregon tonight. State kicks off in 2 hours.
Yeah. FS1. I know Suk likes Washington.
I do. I unfortunately, I think the Beavs can get another win or two, but I don't think it's going to come against Washington. I think this is going to be a different animal. I'm not going to say it's going to be as bad as Utah, but they've played three teams that have 500 records or better. The close one against Hawaii is 5-4. And then the two real teams that actually have positive records are Utah and Oklahoma State, and they laid 50 on both of them.
Two things. One, it's finally nice to have a game of note down there that they're fired up about. And two, they're playing with house money. Like, what a great spot to be in.
Yeah.
Nobody cares.
You've already
it's
exceeded
not like,
all
if
expectations.
If they get their ass kicked, it doesn't matter. They're already 4-4. They've already blown the doors off of people's expectations for them this year. Yep. So you got nothing to lose. That's a dangerous spot to be in if you're Washington, because they're kind of on the other side of that where it's like, it's just not the year they thought they were going
to
have.
And outside of pride or a crappy bowl game, there's really nothing to play for. So I'll tell you what, if Washington comes into this as in a flat spot with Oregon State's offense, that's the you can't sleep on them. Oregon State can jump on you in a hurry with the way they play offense. It's just a matter of whether Washington's head is still in this thing.
All right, coming up next, Joey Harrington joins us. We'll find out how he feels about Oregon's final three before possibly the Pac-12 championship game, most likely the Pac-12 championship game. And that'll be next for his weekly hit. But first, Mike with SportsCenter.
This is a Football Friday edition of Primetime with Isaac and Suk.
Brought to you by the Radio.com app.
On 1080 The Fan.
Well, it's really disappointing that we don't get to physically see Joey Harrington this week. He has to do a phoner.
But it's a little uncomfortable that you've now taken a picture of Joey and are putting it in front of the desk and longingly staring at it. It's making me uncomfortable.
I had to, Joe. I had to.
Well, at least, you know, Suk, now we're in the same boat because, like, weekly, like, I've felt that discomfort.
Yeah.
And so now you can experience that with me.
Yeah, it's equal.
Right? Is it weird that I have a cardboard cut out of you?
It's a little strange.
Define strange.
Let me ask you this.
See, he's into it.
I want to ask you this because, I mean, you were a big deal. Still are. But, you know,
New York City billboard? Yeah, you're talking about me or him?
Well, both of you.
Okay,
I mean,
thanks.
You're both big deals. What is the strangest piece of Joey memorabilia that you have or that you've seen?
Uh-oh.
Are you asking me or are you asking Isaac?
Well, I know what Isaac's is, but we can't share with that with the folks. I'm asking you. Did you keep any of that stuff or did you, you know, do you... Is that something that, you know, maybe kids take a look at and kind of laugh at? But do you have anything from the olden days there?
You know, it's funny. I was actually just going through some of the boxes down at my foundation office. And, you know, I have my Fiesta Bowl jersey and helmet and shoes and, you know, that type of stuff. I've got my whole play. You know, I've got my game plan book from the Fiesta Bowl. You know, so like all the plays that we had in the game plan that week and all the, you know, my notes and stuff. But nothing that I can think of that's like overtly strange.
No one, you never saw anyone with like, you know, like t-shirts or posters, anything that people had made up.
Yeah, not offhand.
And you don't have any.
Ruin your segment there. You know, I thought we, you know, you thought, oh man, we're gonna take this in a really cool place.
And something I was like, great. No.
Joey's pretty lame.
He's got a playbook.
Wait, so it's all boxed up? Like you don't have anything in your house at all that is commemorative of the Joey Harrington golden days?
I mean, I've got a few things around, but not, you know, I've got my bull rings and kind of, but nothing really, you know, out and about.
All right.
You know, honestly, I mean, part of it is I don't want, you know, I don't want my kids to see it and think that it's something that they have to do, right? You know, I want them to make their own choices and I want them to have their own ideas and their own interests. And I don't want them like walking through the house, you know, on the way to their bedroom and every day see like, you know, dad's Fiesta Bowl jersey or the Fiesta Bowl, you know, MVP trophy or something like that and think, oh man, that's what I got to live up to. I mean, that's, you know, and plus, in all honesty, a lot of my stuff was like, because I was that guy who was always a finalist but never actually won anything. You know, it's like, hey, Davey O'Brien, finalist. Hey, Heisman Trophy, finalist. Hey, Walter Camp, finalist. It's like, hey, cool. That's like all those second place, you know, participant trophies. So, yeah.
Yeah, I had that same thing with, I was worried about my son, you know, doing that same thing. And then he turned out to be tiny and Korean. So that kind of took care of him following in my footsteps. Not many.
Well, that's one, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I'm saying, if you want.
Hey, Jeremy Lin.
It's a very easy way to make sure that your son doesn't follow in your offensive line footsteps is marry a 4'11 Asian woman. And that pretty much eliminates him from offensive line play for life.
Wow. That is one way to do it.
Yeah, I'm just
one way to do it.
I'm saying, I'm just throwing that out there for future reference.
And your kids are super aware of who daddy was. I mean, I'm no offense, but when we had those teenagers in the other day that were like job shadowing or whatever, they were just hanging out. I was telling them we were interviewing you, and they were like, "Wait, who?"
Yeah, like, well, no clue.
Yeah,
the best is like, I'll get the kids who will come up now and like ask for an autograph, but they'll kind of be looking over their shoulder and be like, "Wait, Dad, is this the guy, Dad?
Yeah, that's the
one. Is this the guy I should?" Yeah, I'm supposed to get your autograph for my dad back there. No, my kids actually have been. Are more aware because of like friends who will say something. It's like, oh dude, your dad was in the NFL. I'm like, what, that guy? Or
wait,
and now my youngest, now my youngest is, we've kind of had to work out of that. Well, my dad was famous. Like he doesn't know like what that actually truly means, but someone said it to him once. He's like, oh really? Oh, my dad is famous. Oh, hey, did you know my dad's famous? It's like, okay, hold on. Like that's let's take a deep breath here. Let's talk, buddy.
I love it.
You know, they don't. I mean, they get it, but they don't really. I try not to overwhelm them or just, you know, say this is what you have to be.
Yeah, that's good. Joey Harrington every Friday, courtesy BMW of Portland, Portland's only BMW dealer. Where relationships matter, BMWPortland.com. At what point did the patented 1080 The Fan Joey Harrington worry meter peak against USC?
About the end of the first quarter.
Yeah, it was pretty hairy. It was 10-0, looking like maybe 17.
I was thinking I maybe should have adjusted up to about a 973 by intervals of 17.
Yep.
On the worry meter. No, that was 2 weeks ago. We went up to like 5,000 last week.
I think we did, and I think our intervals were maybe 13, but I don't remember.
It's an evolving thing.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, it wasn't so much that they fell behind quickly. It was the manner in which USC was able to move the ball so efficiently right out of the gates. That's what made me nervous. Because we have, if you haven't come to expect it, you should. For the rest of the season, here's what you should expect. A slow building Oregon team that closes well in the fourth quarter, right? You know, Sook, you should know this. Like teams that are built on strong offensive line play, tough smash mouth defense, those teams aren't the ones that come blazing out of the gates right away. Those are the ones that hit you in the mouth, and they may only get 2 to 3 yards per carry in the first quarter. But then in the second quarter, it's 3 to 4 yards. And then in the third quarter, it's 5 to 6 yards. And then they just start wearing you down by the end. And that's what we've seen from this Oregon team. The thing that made me a little bit nervous, like I said, is the fact that USC just came out and went, bop, 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 touchdown. bop, 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 field goal. And now it's 10-0 before you could blink. And it's like, oh, man, our defense has been pretty good. If this is how it's going to be, we could have, you know, we could have a little bit of fight on our hands.
Yeah, it's like a boxer that just goes to the body. And then in the late rounds, those are called the championship rounds. And the thing that I kind of been impressed with is second half adjustments. And I think you've seen what a big time defensive coordinator can do coming in. USC's got receivers. Pittman and Vaughn are both going to play in the NFL. Those guys are legit. And I thought Oregon did a great job in the second half making adjustments to that. And give Arroyo credit. I think he has grown up a lot here in this last month. And the second half adjustments and game plan, I think, have really bailed Oregon out of a lot of sticky situations here. And I give a lot of credit to the coaching staff.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's I would say two different points, offensively and defensively. Defensively, we talked about it 2 weeks ago when Washington State went big over the top, and a couple of DBs went palms up in the middle of the field. Like, no, wait, you're supposed to get him. Like, what is going on? We didn't see that against USC, and that is exactly a credit to the coaching staff to make sure that those guys were ready to face arguably the best receiving core in the conference. And then, like you said, offensively, Arroyo has done a great job. I think since the Colorado game, that's really when I saw it kind of click. Is that in the first half of the Colorado game, they went from a team that had been run pass to start the game to a team that could go pass, run. And they were able to, they didn't go pass, run, you know, and cut it loose like some teams would do with a quarterback like Justin. But what they did is they got him more involved early. They actually put the load on his shoulders and allowed the running game to be a great complement, as opposed to, you know, what happened at the end of that Auburn game, which was they were so focused on the run that they forgot that they had, you know, arguably the best quarterback in the country. And so you got to give Marcus credit that he's done a really nice job of evolving with the, you know, not just like game planning and adjustments, but evolving with the type of players that he has available. You know, in those first couple of games, he had nobody outside. And now you've seen the emergence of a couple wide receivers, and you're starting to see the offense open up a little bit. And yeah, you got to give those coaches credit.
A lot of people think they may be due for one of those, you know, clunkers. But I don't know, man. I first of all, the way they're constructed, like you say, just – you can trust them over four quarters. They have the big boys. And then I was going to ask you about the bye week too. Boy, I think this bye week comes at a great time because we were talking last week about three huge games in a row. I feel like getting a bye to saddle up for the final three games so that you don't slip up is enormous. And I just wonder your perspective on a player's perspective on how big bye weeks are, and specifically how big this bye week may be for Oregon.
So this one is perfect. This one is absolutely perfectly timed because you said it. This stretch run, once you hit November, I don't want to say it doesn't matter how good you are, but what I will say is that every team, no matter how good they are, will face a huge amount of adversity for one reason or another, whether it's, you know, guys are just gassed and they're tired at the end of the year, whether somebody is giving them their best shot and trying to make their season by knocking off a top 10 team in November. You see it every year, right? You know, you see, I guarantee that there will be two teams at the very least, and obviously excluding the LSU-Alabama game this weekend, but there will be at least two teams from the top 10 that lose in this last month of the season a game that they are not expected to lose, a game that you'll look at and say, whoa, I didn't see that one coming. And it's because these guys are just, they're gassed.
Yeah.
By the end of the year, they're just so tired of taking everybody's best shot that, you know, like you said a minute ago, Suk, like a boxer, you know, they just get worn down and somebody catches them. And that's why this bye week is great. It's because you have another chance to reload, to refocus, and prepare for one last push.
In that event, the next three games, they're going to be favored. So let's take a break. And when we come back, I want to ask Joey about signs of a potential letdown. I mean, what do you look for? I mean, you were a team leader. What to watch for there? And then we'll talk about the college football playoff rankings. More with Joey Harrington. Brought to you by BMW of Portland. Coming up next on The Fan.
This is a Football Friday edition of Primetime with Isaac and Suk.
Brought to you by the Radio.com app.
On 1080 The Fan.
All right, we're back with Joey Harrington. Phoner this week, disappointed, but we have his cardboard cut out to stare longingly at. So,
signs of a potential letdown. We were talking about this bye week coming at a great time. I think that second bye, by the way, is just...
It's huge.
It's just enormous. And the timing of it is important. And Oregon's got a great spot here where they can now recalibrate for the final three games. And they'll be favored in all three of those games. But as a team leader, quarterback, a guy that other players look to, what kinds of things do you look for or did you look for in terms of a potential letdown? Maybe seeing signs that your team maybe not taking an opponent seriously enough.
You know, at this point in the season, I don't know that it's that you're not taking the opponent seriously enough as much as it would be like you get into a game and realize you're just flat, right? Sometimes you can prepare and sometimes you can be ready, and but you know, that ball kicks off and all of a sudden you just don't have it. And that's when you need the guys, that's when you need your leaders, your seniors to grab people. I've said it before. You need them to grab you by the face mask and say, get your butt in gear. And if you don't have it, then hop on my shoulders because I'm going to take you there. And that's what the leaders have to do, is they have to be aware, not necessarily, I mean, every day at practice, people are harping on you to be prepared. I mean, that's the coaches, right? That's their job, to get guys ready. As a team leader, it's your job on Saturday to make sure that when guys aren't feeling it, that I don't want to say they fall in line, but that you're there to pick them up, that you're there to carry them across the finish line. Because when you can do that once or twice, then they start to believe in you, right? It's that idea of, you know, I always told people, well, how are you, you know, they would ask, well, why, how are you so confident? How are you so, you know, were you always so, did you always believe that you were going to win? How are you able to put that forth? I said, well, I didn't. Most of the time I just faked it, right? You know, like you just kind of pretend like you're confident. You pretend like, you know, you're not worried. And the guys around you who are looking at you then all of a sudden feel better. You know, if you can bring one or two of those guys along in a tough spot, then that, you know, you've done your job. So that's the thing that I look for from leaders down this stretch run. It's not so much about overlooking somebody, because everybody knows the importance of every game. It's in those moments of struggle, who grabs you and pulls you across the finish line.
This is such a great point. And I want to go back to it real quick, because I do. It bothers me when people, you know, the team comes out and they get upset, right? And instantly it turns into that they weren't prepared, or they didn't care, or they took them too light, or, you know, I say this to people in everyday life. You wake up and go for a run. Some days you wake up and for whatever reason, you're spry, right? And you just feel like you're running. Other days you go out and you can go half of what you normally go, and it feels like you got a 1,000-pound rock on your back. There's just days where you go out and your legs or your arms, and it's just not feeling it. And by God, this happens in football. And it's not something that anyone wants to happen, but everyone that has played the game in a high level has been in that game where you go to the sidelines and you turn to your teammate for whatever reason, like, dude, I don't know what it is. Like, I'm a step slow, or it's off, or I'm struggling with my snap, or I'm throwing high, or, you know, it's just... And we all believe this thing to be some sort of lack of focus or whatever. It is really hard for 19, 20, 21-year-old young men for 13 weeks to be up and be at your best every single week. So I just thought that was a really good point, that if someone does get upset, it's not necessarily because they wanted it, or they didn't care, or they didn't prepare.
Right. That's why you see. And the example that always jumps into my mind. Remember a few years ago with Oklahoma State, it was Brandon Whedon and, oh God, who was the wide receiver? Was it Dez Bryant? I think it was the guy after Dez Bryant. I mean, they were, you know, on their stretch for the first, you know, they were number two in the country. And last week of the season, like, somebody who had no business beating them just got them.
Yeah.
And it happens literally every single year. And it's not because they weren't focused, and it wasn't because they took their opponent lightly. It wasn't because they didn't realize the gravity of the moment. It's simply because after, like you said, what, 11 games, after a month of training camp, after 3 to 4 months of doing this to your body every single day, that at the end of it, they just didn't have it. And sometimes that happens. And that's what you need your leaders for. That's what you need those guys to to recognize and rally the troops. That's why you need those senior leaders.
Well, it's pretty special what Oregon's got going on if they can finish this off. I mean, I think it's only been 8 times that a team has run the table in the league. 8. I mean,
it's
like,
hard.
Like you guys are saying, yeah, it's we take that for granted.
We couldn't, you know, on both of our teams, even the team we finished number 2 in the country, we didn't run the table.
Right.
And the year before, we got all the way through until the Civil War game. And, you know, that's the whole Joey Five Picks thing. I mean, it happens because it is extremely difficult to go from start to finish.
Could it be Justin Blackmon that you were thinking of?
Yeah. There you go.
There it is.
Boy, they had so many good receivers have come through there.
Oh, they had a good match there.
So, yep. You okay with the college football playoff rankings? You think, are you one of those guys that thinks that's all just going to sort itself out?
Yeah. I mean, it's the same idea that, you know, people were jumping ship once we lost to Auburn week 1. It's like, okay, just be patient. If I'm going to pick one thing to be a little bit about, you know, it might be the Georgia over the top of Oregon, but I can understand, you know, them taking, you know, the Georgia beat Florida, and you know they're giving that Notre Dame win a lot of credit. I can understand that. But look, the thing that makes me a little bit nervous about this is the situation that could play out where, let's say, LSU loses to Alabama this weekend on a 1-point game, you know, at the buzzer, right? And then Alabama and Georgia play each other in the SEC championship game. Well, whether it's, you know, Georgia beating Alabama to have 3 1-loss teams, or whether it's Alabama running the table, I'm still afraid of that LSU team that's sitting there with 1 loss, like in the same situation like Alabama was a few years ago, where they didn't even play in the conference championship game. But there's such a level of respect for those programs that you could see that LSU team or Alabama team, whichever it is, being voted in at the end. That's the thing that makes me a little nervous with this setup. Other than that, I mean, I could very easily see the Oregon-Utah game being a play-in. You know, Ohio State and Penn State are going to play each other. Penn State and Minnesota play each other. There's a lot of football left to be played. And I think for the most part, it will sort itself out. You know, worst case scenario is you end up with 11 1-loss teams and you're playing that coin toss game. But I think, you know, you see it every year. 2 to 3 teams are going to be very solid, and then you'll have a discussion about that last team.
Yeah, it's scary. Not only do you have the LSU thing, but Penn State and Ohio State, you could face that same thing, because both of those, if Ohio State or and Penn State only have the 1 loss, or one of them has a 1 loss and it's to the other and it's close, same sort of thing. LSU and Ohio State and Penn State at 1 loss are going to have a really, really good resume with probably, you're looking at 4 to 5 quality top 25 wins, and Oregon and Utah are going to have 1.
I don't see... Let's say Ohio State beats Penn State, right? I don't see Penn State garnering the same amount of respect nationally as the second place SEC team does. I don't disagree with your logic, but I think that the committee would be more apt to put in a 1-loss Pac-12 conference champion, or
flip,
you know,
that and say,
you know, one
if,
loss.
But what if it's Ohio State? What if it's Ohio State that's the 1-loss team?
Trouble.
You're in trouble.
Hey, what do you think about this game against Arizona next week? Am I changing the subject a little enough? I don't know. I mean, those are the situations that you hope you don't end up in, or you hope that, you know, people will value the. I'm a big proponent of valuing a conference championship.
Totally agree. Right?
If you can make it all the way through and truly win your conference, that means a lot to me. And not to discredit, let's say an Ohio State losing to Penn State and finishing with 1 loss, or an LSU losing to Alabama and finishing with 1 loss, but they don't play that extra game, right? They don't play. They don't have that one remaining opportunity to, I don't say to risk getting knocked off or to not lose. But it's a big deal, right? It's not so much that you won this game; it's that you didn't lose. Like, you survived that gauntlet, and whereas the other teams didn't, and that means something to me.
And style points, you know, style points matter. These next 3 games, if you get an opportunity to rack some up, make it look better than, Well, like, for example, Clemson always seems to do this. Clemson always seems to have, Dabo seems to, I mean, I don't want to say run it up. I'm at a loss for words for what you call it. But just, you know, style points. You need those.
Yeah, they've earned a little bit of respect. But I think the best case scenario for anybody outside of the SEC is for Clemson to lose. You know, Clemson loses, and now we got ourselves a real big picture.
That's huge. I'm just saying, like, for Oregon's last three games, look, you got a chance to put an extra 10 to 14 points on top of it. And it's so taboo to say run it up, but you kind of need that. Like, the end of the USC game was important. Not only did they come back and win that game, they put their foot on their throat. And that I think matters for perception if it's going to be a beauty contest.
True, but I also think what I think may matter more is what Utah does, right? If Utah goes out and flips up against, you know, a surging UCLA this weekend, you know, people forget that UCLA is the team that actually controls the South right now. That's scary. And I think what Utah does down the stretch will actually be more important than what Oregon does, considering, you know, let's say Oregon wins out and just kind of like, you know, they win, they're good. But that opportunity for Utah to improve their visibility nationally and then for Oregon to beat them in the championship game, I think that will actually play better than, you know, putting up a couple extra touchdowns against Arizona. Yeah.
I got you. All right, sir. We will talk to you next week. Thank you.
You betcha, guys.
Joey Harrington, every Friday, 5:30, courtesy of BMW Portland. Let's move on to the club next on The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.